Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hello, I'm good, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Okay, it's Thursday, December 30th, 2004, 5:16 p.m., just a couple of days before the new year. I hope everybody had a good Christmas. I hope everybody got stuff they wanted. You know, I've always been kind of a tough person to buy things for. For Christmas, because frankly, I really don't ask for a whole lot. When I give gifts, I tend to give very practical gifts. For example, I might give somebody a CD player if they've got a lot of CDs, a portable CD player, or some tool that they need. You know, just practical stuff, things that I know that people are going to use and keep for a time. I don't want to give a kind of gift that's, to me, you know, kind of frivolous. You know, and a CD player may seem frivolous, but if you're a kid like my son, my oldest son James, or my other sons Christopher, Jonathan, actually they're my stepsons, but I consider them my sons. You know, a CD player is a good thing for them because they're like teenagers and it helps them carry their music around with them. But I believe in giving practical gifts, and I like receiving practical gifts, things that I can use. I like to cook, so you know, a nice set of pots or pans or some something that helps me cook, you know, things like that. Those are always helpful and useful items. But it is nice to get stuff, but I really get more joy out of giving things to people. Now, if you read the blog regularly, you'll notice that on the top of the page, on the banner, and on the sidebar, there have been a couple of little changes. I have, instead of saying blog of the working man, it now says blog of the unemployed man with working crossed out. And the stuff about the IBEW has been removed, and also from the closing stuff. This is because I was fired last Wednesday, 3 days before Christmas. I was at that job for about a year, and I was kind of expecting to be laid off at the end of January anyway. But since I had some attendance problems, mainly because I had my own health issues to deal with, and because I took some days off to take care of my wife, who's been having some more serious health issues, I used up all of my medical leave and my unexcused absences. Now, my plant where I work works on what they call a point system. If you have an unexcused absence, they issue you a point. And when you get to 8 points, that's... You know, they give you a warning, and you get anything over that, and that's it. The system originally had 12 points, and the points zeroed out at the beginning of the year. In other words, if you had 10 points in December 30th when you got to January 1st, it automatically reverted back to zero. They changed that. They made it 8 points, and you got a point back a year after you used it. So in other words, if I took an unexcused absence on May 5th, I would have to wait till the next May 5th. If I took one on May 5th, 2004, I'd have to wait till May 5th on 2005 before I got that point back. I thought that was highly unfair, but there wasn't a whole hell of a lot I can do about it. Realistically, I was supposed to have been let go on the 10th, but the union, and the union fought as hard as they could, I guess. They managed to keep me on the job until the 22nd, and they considered that to be a small miracle in and of itself. You know, frankly, the company were being a bunch of pricks about it. And frankly, the people who run that place are a bunch of heartless bastards. You know, especially since they know they're going to lay somebody off at the end of the month anyway, and they understand, they know that I was having medical problems, and that my wife was having some medical issues, and that it was not a case of me abusing the system or screwing around, you know, using days off to just screw around. I mean, my wife has been in and out of the hospital for the last year. In fact, she's at the hospital right now. She hasn't been admitted. She's just basically waiting to get some stuff taken care of. If you work through Grady Memorial Hospital System here in Atlanta, you expect a lot of delays. It just shit takes forever. And she was supposed to have had some surgery today, as a matter of fact, but because they're still not satisfied with the state of her health to survive the operation to begin with, that had been postponed. And we were hoping to get it done as soon as possible because we have to go to New York to my sister's wedding in April, and now I'm not too sure because she has to have a liver examination, and then she has to she has to go through the process again, a pre-op appointment, to make sure everything's going to be all right. So that could be another 2-3 months down the line. And my wife is still living in a lot of pain because of the fibroids growing in her uterus that are putting pressure on a nerve. She actually looks like she's 2 or 3 months pregnant. But at any rate, the fact that the union couldn't really help me out as far as keeping my job is concerned, it really does show how little power the union really has there. I don't doubt that the union president, a nice lady named Robbie, she fought as hard as she could for me, and she did the best that she could. But, you know, it's a red state, and the union doesn't have a lot of power down here, especially the IBEW, which is not one of the larger, more powerful unions. A coworker who used to live up in Philadelphia told me that if it had happened in the union up there, where she was, the worst that would have happened was for me to have been put on some kind of probation. And as it is, I went a day and a half over my allotted time off, so they canned me. And that's just the reality of the workplace in this day and age. The only thing I was bitching about, and of course, frankly, losing the job isn't that big a deal, was the fact that the difference between being let go and being laid off affects a lot of different things. If I had been laid off, then I could have hung on to my health care benefits for a little while longer. It would not have been a problem getting unemployment. Now I'm probably going to have to fight for unemployment. I applied for it, and we'll see if we can get it. The union is setting me up with another job in someplace else, and I hope that pans out. I'll let everybody know. But the days I missed weren't that big a deal. In fact, by late November, I was sitting at 5.5 points, and like I told you about the point system. And you can get a half a point if you leave. If you only work for 6 hours and you have to go for whatever reason. And I had a couple of days like that where I had to go when I found out my wife was admitted to the hospital when she had just had a doctor's appointment. I remember one day I had to go early because I just bought new shoes and they weren't broken in and my feet were absolutely killing me. I could not stand up. I could barely step on them. I had to take my shoes off to leave. And you wear steel-toed shoes in that plant. But I couldn't hardly walk, and in a couple of days they broke in enough so that they were very comfortable. In fact, the shoes are comfortable now. I use them as my regular shoes, but you know, you get a half a point for that. But in the last, from like November to December, I missed 4 straight days. Was it straight days? No, I missed a day on the 16th because my wife was feeling particularly sick and I needed to stay home and take care of her. Then I missed a day because I went to the auto shop, and I think I mentioned this on the show around that time. I went to the auto shop to get what I thought was going to be a simple fix, my alternator belt tightened, but which turned out to be a 5.5-6 hour marathon, and I wound up losing a point there. I did not go into work that day, but if I had gone into work, I still would have been issued a point because I would have gone in past the two-hour mark. My job starts at 3 o'clock. They didn't finish up there until like 5, 5.30. And by the time I got down there with the traffic, it would have been at least 6, 6.30. And there's no way, you know, there's no sense in even going on at that point. And then I had 2 days that I missed because of my throat operation. And that was, you know, I don't recall if I just didn't know I had enough, if I thought I had 2 more days or one more sick day or not. But I guess I had used all that up too. And they just didn't want to count it, so it was 2 points issues, and I was at 9.5 points, and that's it. But like I said, it used to be under the old system, if I had 12 points, then there wouldn't be a problem. We wouldn't have had that conversation, and I would have looked forward to going back to work on January. And as a matter of fact, if I hadn't been let go, I would not have worked this week at all because the shop closes down over Christmas. They do have some work that's there, but everybody has to volunteer for it, and that's all basically done by seniority. And I signed up, and it's all by badge number. I had badge number 8722, and the higher the number, you know, the lower the number, the more seniority you have. And of all the people who volunteer, and they were only looking for like 30 or so people, the lowest number in my particular field was like 8,200. So there was no way I was going to be able to get to work. I signed up for it, of course. I would have preferred to have worked and gotten a full 5 days of work. But, hey, at any rate, losing the job doesn't bother me that much. Seriously, it doesn't. I mean, the pay and the benefits were pretty good for that kind of unskilled labor. But the truth of the matter is that it was a pretty boring job in a very badly organized plant filled with supervisors who were a horrible combination of arrogance and incompetence. I never expected to make a career out of it. In fact, I remember when I was working on the paint line before I moved over to the assembly area, and I was talking to my friend Dave, and I said, Dave, if you see me working here 5 years from now, shoot me. You know, I wasn't expecting to make a career out of that. I simply needed, you know, a job to get some money in the bank and get me caught up. But, you know, I wanted to get laid off, and I was actually kind of hopeful. You know, the best thing I was hoping for from the company was for them to say, well, instead of letting you go, we're going to lay you off. It's just a difference in thing. And they didn't even do that, and that's why I call them a bunch of heartless bastards. You know, that's why I think they're a bunch of heartless motherfuckers. It really, really pisses me off, you know. Now, if I have to fight for unemployment, I'll bring all my medical records. I'll bring all my wife's medical records. I'll let them know that I wasn't just goofing around. But, you know, they're being a state organization. They're under the gun, too, to save as much money as they possibly can. And so they're liable to look for any excuse they can to not give anybody any unemployment. And that's just the long and short of it, you know. I don't know. If my wife had gone to surgery, I would have been down there right now. I would not have recorded a show tonight. I would have been down there, and I probably would have stayed there while she was in the hospital. And then, you know, when she came home, I would have probably had to stay home a few days to make sure she was all right while I did whatever job searching I could. But what really bugs me about the whole thing is the utter lack of humanity, for want of a better word, from the company. I mean, they weren't concerned about my health. They weren't concerned about my welfare. They weren't concerned about my wife's health. Where all that matters to them was that I took a day and a half more than I was allowed to, and I was at. See ya. I mean, never mind the fact that it's Christmas. I mean, frankly, all this stuff is kind of overrated. If it's wrong to fucking fire you at Christmas over something trivial, it's wrong to do the same thing in May or in August. And it's especially true if they refuse to budge, knowing you have some real issues to deal with. And I bet you there's some corporate executive weasel who was having or is having a good laugh over the fact that they saved the company a couple of $100s. You know, a company whose profits, by the way, are in the billions annually. And meanwhile, I have to fight with unemployment, you know, just so I can get by. The truth of the matter is they didn't have to let me go under those circumstances. Letting me stay on until the official layoff would not have cost them anything, nor would have cost anything just to change my status from terminated to layoff. This is something they did because they wanted to do it, period. And that says something about the kind of atmosphere that exists in the American workplace, especially down here in the red states. Now, on to top that all off, it turned out that my wife was in the hospital over Christmas anyway. And she wound up staying there for like 3 days. In fact, she went in like the Thursday after I got let go. And she wound up staying there through Christmas. And we spent Christmas in the hospital. And she was diagnosed with diabetes, among other things. She's all, among all of other problems, she now has type 1 diabetes, which is the type we have to take the shots for. I have type 2 diabetes, which I'm taking medicine for, which, but I can control it with the medicine and with my diet. And, of course, since I have no more health care, I don't believe I'm going to be able to continue getting my medication. So I'm going to have to deal with that as it comes along. You know, frankly, it's a crappy ending to a crappy year. I don't know if it's going to get any better in 2005. I certainly friggin' hope it does. But, you know, whatever. But, you know, the thing about it is, despite the spending Christmas in the hospital, realistically, you know, we had a pretty good time. And I'm going to talk about that a little more in the next segment. Let's hear from our friends at The Onion. BuzzFlash hasn't updated their Hypocrite of the Week, so we're going to do that. Hopefully, they'll do that hopefully next week. And they're probably taking some time off for the holidays, like most of us have. But in the meantime, here's a news flash from our friends at TheOnion.com, and we'll be back. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
An assistant manager has been corrupted by power. It's the Onion Radio News. I'm Doyle Redland. Restaurant officials say Andrew Stinson, promoted just 6 weeks ago to assistant manager at a Kansas City Denny's, is drunk with power. Prep cook Julian Porter.
Now he's got that gold sticker on his name tag. He'll stop at nothing to ensure prompt service and delicious meals at Denny's.
Stinson could not be reached for comment and has reportedly retreated to a secret compound in the rear of Denny's, protected by a legion of armed busboys. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News. Pick up the Onion at your newsstand or visit theonion.com.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's the feeling of Christmas. People pass, children laughing, and for mile after mile, on every street corner, you'll hear silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Take a lane, hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Last night, my child looked up at me and said, "Uncle Steve." He didn't know I was his father, and I didn't know for sure either. I just assumed I was. I'd had his mother so many times, and in so many different ways. The odds were with me. Anyway, he looked up at me and said, "What does Christmas mean to you?" And I said, "Lemuel, Christmas is a time for giving, a time for receiving, a time for eggnog and rum, a time for cutting down trees and hanging plastic doodads on them and watching them die slowly in your living room, catch fire and burn down your house and all your possessions. It's a time for buying things that haven't sold all year long, wrapping them up in shiny paper and giving them to your friends. Return them and find out you got it on sale. They can only exchange them for things of equal value, like charcoal briquettes or matchbooks with other people's names on them. time for giving your wife that special coat she always wanted. Those seals didn't need their fur anyway. What do they want it for? They're dead already. It's a time for eggnog and brandy, driving home on icy streets, accidentally nudging the car next to you off the bridge into the frozen river, watching the car sink, seeing the bubbles float up under the water. It's time to sip an eggnog martini and think about the poor, and talk of feeding the naked and clothing the hungry. Time to get Christmas cards from all your friends that consolidated and allied and Acme. Time for seeing all those happy children sitting on Santa's lap, Toyland, thinking to yourself, maybe I'll be a Santa next year. 12 years old is not so far from 18. Maybe I should be laying a little groundwork for the future. It's a time for parties at the office with eggnog and vodka, telling your boss what you really think of him, while he gets a perfect Xerox of your wife's rear end. Time for sitting by the hearth, sipping eggnog and tequila, with your feet up on a burning log, realizing that Uncle Walt has been in your garage for 45 minutes with the car running. You say to yourself, damn, Uncle Walt, you were supposed to bring me back more eggnog. And that, Lemuel, is what Christmas means to me.
Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Martin and Paul Simon, with the true meaning of Christmas. And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And of course, again, you can listen to me on rantradio.com Thursdays, I think, at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Sundays at midnight Eastern, midnight Monday or midnight Sunday, late Sunday with midnight starting Monday. I always hate that. Try to get that stuff straight. Let me get a drink of water here. Hang on. I was listening to a little bit of Mike Malloy the other day. He is always in fine form on Air America Radio evenings from 11 to 1, I believe, or 10 to 1 on Air America Radio. You can stream it live there, or you can listen at whatever station you get that's an Air America affiliate, and those numbers are growing every day. We do have one here in Atlanta. But since I never listen to actual radio anymore, mostly because our reception here sucks and mostly because I can't stand radio in general, I don't really bother with it. You get all that stuff through the internet now anyway, and that's mostly what I care about. But at any rate, Mike had Mark Perkel on, or is it Perkel? Mike pronounced it Perkel. I'll have to double-check with that. But this is the guy who is responsible for BartCop.com. Not responsible for, but he's the one who runs the server for BartCop. And he is going to be my guest on the next show, and he is going to be talking about the Church of Reality, among other things. And speaking of Bart Kopp, I have confirmed him as a guest for Blogfest 2006. Now, this is going to be taking place in the spring of 2006. Hopefully, there will be no major political events going on there. As I mentioned in previous shows, this is basically going to be a three-day party for left-wing bloggers or left-wing websites, basically. And Bart Kopp has agreed to come on down to host or participate or both in a poker tournament of some sort. And I still haven't come up with a name for that. The Bart Kopp Invitational, I guess we'll call it. And the Blogfest is shaping up to be a good deal. I'm still writing a business plan for it because I've been slowed down by it, by other personal things that are coming up. But I will have a business plan done. It'll be up on the site. And so you can download it and read the business plan. And if you want to contribute or donate or become a sponsor, which is even more important, let me know. I'm going to begin the process of recruiting local staff early in January. I'm going to go through a few meetups to talk to some people. At any rate, it is good news that Bart Kopp is going to be there. I hope to get a lot of the big-name bloggers. I want Atrios to be there. I want Marcos from Daily Coast to be there. Maybe Josh Marshall from Talking Points Menu, whoever I can talk to get down here. Even my nemesis, Beachon, who is a convention expert, not a convention expert, who's been a convention guest for many years and is a brilliant graphic designer. I'll give him that for all his weird political ideas. He is an awesome artist. He said he might work up some logos and some T-shirts and stuff like that. We shall see. I have yet to speak to him about that in more detail, but we shall see. At any rate, what have we got going on here? Well, you know, as I mentioned in the last segment, I spent Christmas basically at the hospital with my wife. And she had gone in there for a standard appointment, and she wound up staying because her blood sugar was going through the roof. Her blood sugar was about between 5 and 600. And if you don't know anything about diabetes, if you don't know anything about your blood sugar count, your blood sugar should be no more, depending on the person, but generally between 80 and 120. If it goes below 80, that can be dangerous. If it goes above 120, well, depending on how high it gets, that can be dangerous too. My wife's second husband was diabetic, and he passed out a couple of times. We had an incident where I worked, in fact, where a lady whose blood sugar went up just kind of sort of passed out. And that's what happens. That's what can happen when you have diabetes. And it can be a very debilitating disease if you're not careful. And my wife has now got the whole schmear going. She's got to take insulin shots twice a day. And she really has to watch what she eats, and she has to monitor her blood sugar level. I don't monitor mine as much as I should. I should monitor it twice a day, but I found that I can basically keep mine under control because I have type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes comes about when you're a little overweight like I am. I'm not that much overweight, but I'm a little overweight. And when you don't do a lot of exercise and when you're getting older, your body just has a little bit more trouble regulating itself. And I have to take some medications. I'm on glucophage? Well, actually, I'm on metformin, which is a generic for glucophage. It doesn't really matter. It's all the same stuff. And I take that twice a day and some other stuff. I don't always take it twice a day, and now I'm trying to cut down on it a little bit since I can't afford probably to get new stuff. At any rate, my wife has type 1, which means she has to take two actual insulin shots per day as well as watch her diet. And the thing about it is, for me, because I have trouble keeping with my blood sugar getting too high, the big thing I have to watch is lots of sugar. My wife's the same way, too. So we can't have any sodas, and we can't have any candies and stuff like that. And to be honest, I can afford to miss that. I don't mind missing that. But what I do miss is the potatoes and the rice. And although I found out that red potatoes are okay, so as long as we have those in limited numbers, we're all right. And I was told by my doctor I shouldn't cut out starch completely. Just keep my eye on it and have it earlier in the day so you can work it off later. At any rate, now my wife Kathy goes to Grady Memorial Hospital, which is a wonderful, wonderful hospital here in Atlanta, who treat the local poor. And their budget is always one that is being cut, and they're barely getting by as it is. And they're a great hospital, but the problem is because of all the budget cuts, they're completely understaffed, and everything takes forever. It takes forever to get anything done there. I mean, you get an appointment, and you have to wait a couple of days to get just the notice about the appointment. Then usually the appointment is 3 or 4 weeks down the road. And then after that, you have to, and then after that, once that's finished, you go to the next step, and that takes two. That's like when she went to get her operation, as she's still trying to do. She went there, and then they wanted to check with her cardiologist to make sure. Well, she had to wait 3 weeks to see her cardiologist, and then after the cardiologist said okay, they gave her the okay for the operation for like 2 months to schedule the operation. And of course, while that went down, she had a pre-op her pre-op on Tuesday, last Tuesday, and that everything was okay except for something about her liver, which her doctor wants to check out before they have the operation. They don't want to operate on her unless they think they can survive. But damn it, I'm at the point where I said, look, if you don't give her this operation now, we're going to go in there and cut her open herself and take these things out. God almighty, it just takes forever. But the main reason she goes to Grady is because we don't have any health insurance, and we're poor. And Grady will basically take care of her, I don't want to say for nothing, but for a very, very low price. Her prescriptions are very low. They sometimes try to bill us for certain things, but they know we don't have any money, and things are just going to get worse for us with me being unemployed. So, and, you know, and this is a problem because I am one of those people who can never seem to get the hang of the whole money thing. I mean, it goes in and out of my hands faster than I'm even aware of it sometimes. I went shopping today. I had to get some food for the house and some miscellaneous stuff for the kitchen, and I wound up spending about $75-$80. You don't even think about it. Total, $50 for food and about $25 for some of the stuff that I needed for the kitchen. It wasn't even really some big stuff, too. But it just goes, it leaves my hands. It just, it's gone, gone, goodbye. And I never seem to have enough to it, even when I try to cut costs. I mean, after a while, when you're used to that, and when it always happens, so you just simply stop trying. You know, money comes and goes for people like me. And that's a problem because I've never earned a lot of money. I have never earned, in fact, more than $23,500 a year in my entire life. And some people have asked me, I put this up on the blog and I put it up on the Bart Cop message board. They say, how the hell do you survive on that? I said, well, the truth is, you don't do very well at that. And in fact, $23,500, that's the high point. That's not the average, people. That's the high point. There are a lot of years that I've made a lot less than that. And some people can get by all right with that kind of attitude about money if they're particularly talented. I was watching TV, and there was a biography about Charles Dickens, the great author. And they had in his writings where he was saying the same thing about himself. He said, well, I have, you know, money in my pocket, but then, you know, I'll go out somewhere, and then it'll be gone. You know, but, of course, he'd have to be a spendthrift to lose the kind of money he made over the years. And he came from a rich family, too. And, you know, obviously I'm nowhere near as talented as he is, but it doesn't always take a lot of talent to make a lot of money. You know, just ask Paris Hilton or Anna Nicole Smith. Jesus Christ, what's the deal with her? She made a whole big name, this big-titted blonde woman, marrying rich guys, old rich guys who died off. I mean, what the hell is that shit? But despite all that, despite the fact that I always have money problems, I'm pretty much, for the most part, pretty happy guy, and I can handle big disasters well, like this Christmas. I mean, you know, to be honest, that was one of the nicest Christmas I ever had. You know, and we sat and we watched some TV, we played some Scrabble, we both like playing Scrabble, and I'm teaching her how to be more competitive, because I like to be competitive about Scrabble, and she's finally got to the point where she can keep up to me. We used to have to double her score for her to keep up with me. Which is a handicap, but now she's getting better and better, and we don't have to do that anymore. But we played some Scrabble, we watched some TV, we talked to some relatives on the phone, and we generally just had each other for company. And, you know, for some people that would have been a disaster having a relative like that in a hospital at Christmas. But for us it was really one of the best Christmases we ever had. Really the only difference between her being in the hospital and staying home was that we get a few more TV channels at home. And, you know, and of course, this is right after I was dumped from my job. So am I worried about it? Yeah, I'm worried about it because you got to find work again and you don't know what the situation is, especially in a Bush economy. But I have enough experience with this to know that something is going to turn up. I mean, I'm really far too smart to be out of work for so long. And if you know anything, go on the blog, email Sirius Left in particular, email Air America. Tell them, listen, you want the fucking Cup of Joe radio show on your network. Help get Joe a real job so I can reach a lot more people. I'm never going to abandon you guys on the radio. And when there's still going to be a place where the show is going to be available as much as I can work out. But email them. It's right on top, the very top thing in the blogger, right below on the website, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Right below the banner is where it says email Air America Radio and Sirius Left, and tell them to get the Cup of Joe Radio Show on their damn network. You know, but at any rate, the truth of the matter is, and I've said this before, that I'm a very poor person. But what I mean by that is that I'm broke, not poor. In fact, that was what Bill Cosby was talking about when he was talking about how parents are raising kids. And they say, well, you're not poor, you're broke. And it all depends on how you look at it. From a financial point of view, I don't have a lot of money. But in every other regard, you know, I'm really kind of a rich person. You know, the George Bailey kind of rich, not the Mr. Potter kind of rich. I have a wife who loves me. I live, if not luxuriously, I live comfortably. I'm in relatively decent health, and I do a lot of things that I enjoy. Now, some of my relatives consider me a failure because I don't have a decent career, that I move from one dead-end job to the next. And it's true, I do have a problem with focus. I'd get bored with the job after a while, but I'm not really poor. On the other hand, George W. Bush, his political and financial backers, and around the world, people who are like that, they're among the poorest people on earth, never mind how much money they have. I mean, the kind of money they have, and more importantly, the way they go about getting that money, is a chain. It makes them slaves. They're never satisfied with the amount of money that they have, and they're always afraid of people who want to take their place. So they trap themselves in this kind of vicious cycle of attack and defend. They can never rest. They can never be entirely secure. This is why they lock themselves up with toadies and yes men. You know, the very idea that they might be wrong about or take responsibility for something scares the shit out of them. And responsibility is when someone can blame you if something goes wrong. When you have power, you are surrounded by people whose job it is to take the blame for your mistakes. If they're smart, that is. That comes from Cerebus by Dave Sim, when Cerebus was prime minister. And that's exactly the type of mindset we're dealing with when it comes to the Republican leadership. Cabinet members, congressional staffers, soldiers, and other lackeys at the bottom, part of their function is to take the blame for their superiors' mistakes. It's an attitude you see in corporate boardrooms all over the place, and it's now headlining in our government. And it's all based on fear. Can't be wrong about something. Can't be wrong. That destroys the entire illusion that you're building up for yourself. And, you know, don't make any bones about it. They really, really fucking hate people like me. And they hate most of you listening to this show. The idea that we don't want to be like them. The idea that we don't even want to be involved in their little high-level mind games just drives them up the wall. What I want, and what I'm sure most of you out there want who are listening, we want our government to protect us from people like that so that we can concentrate on our own lives. I mean, that was the great victory of the New Deal. People don't understand that. It gave people more power over their lives. And now that it's being dismantled, we're being forced to fight for ourselves against people who see us only as a means to increase their profit margins. And keep in mind, these are people who are very, very good at what they do. And this is part of the reason why we're so bad at this politically at this point in time. Because we're not as interested as they are in gaining power. Now, granted, there are a few people on the far left who are power mongers and want to get that. And everybody has a sense of ego, and that's one thing. But a lot of us are not into power for the sake of power. We're into that because we want to make a better world for everybody. Yeah, there's some naivete involved with that. We're not always right. No one's suggesting that we're always right. We're not always nice people about it. But the truth of the matter is the big difference between them and us is that they don't really have any ideals. Even the ones that they say they have, they're only saying so that they can get people to back them up and support them. They take advantage of your loyalty. They take advantage of your patriotism. You know, and too many people fall for it. That's what's really scary. I mean, I can speak for myself. I'm not interested in getting power. I wouldn't know what to do with it if I had it. I'm simply not cut out for it. I recognize that. If I were to win the lottery tomorrow or have a rich relative that I don't even know about die and leave me $10 million, I'd probably go broke within a couple of years because I really don't know how to handle that kind of money. Or maybe I wouldn't go broke, but, you know, it's very difficult when you're dealing with that because it becomes part of everything that you do. And there are millions of people of you out there, millions of people out there, they're all like yourself, like me, who have to work to earn what we have and also couldn't handle it. I mean, a lot of people think they can handle it, think how great it would be to get that kind of money. And a lot of you out there probably are thinking the same thing. But you know what? Most of you out there couldn't handle it. You couldn't handle that kind of responsibility. And we have to get on and work for a living, which a lot of us don't mind doing. We feel proud that we can do something of value that we get money for, and hopefully it's something that we enjoy so that we can put food on our table, so that we can have a place to live, so that we can have a TV and we can have the nice things that we want, the car, you know, whatever. Now, And now we're finding out that we're going to have to work harder and harder for less and less money and less protection as the cost of living rises. I mean, and I've said this before. My dad made $6.50 in 1968, and he could support a family of five with that. I make $13 an hour now, or I made when I had my last job, and that's barely enough to support myself and my wife. And the sure salary has gone up, although $13 an hour is pretty damn good. There's a lot of people still out there making $6.50 an hour, but you're paying what? You're paying six times more for rent. You're paying probably 10 or 11 times more for food. Utilities are much higher. Rent is really the biggie. But, you know, it's that's what's killing us right now. And we're not quite as bad off as people who live in real poverty. Places like Mexico and Thailand and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and all those places that got hit. That's real poverty. And I'm going to talk about that tsunami thing in the next segment. But that's real poverty. Some of us understand all of this, and we're starting to fight back. And make no mistake, we've got a long fight ahead of us. We didn't want this fight. We didn't ask for this fight. It was forced on us by people who have nothing better to do with their lives than to see how many of our lives they can screw up. Can we win this fight? I don't know. But we can't afford to lose it, ladies and gentlemen. Because to lose it is to lose all of your freedoms. Lose all control over your lives. We'll take a break. We'll talk about the tsunami and our chintzy response to it. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Santa works all day in his workshop, making a lot of games and toys. Then one day he hops in his sleigh to bring them to the girls and boys. Santa's just as nice as he could be. There's just one fucking thing that worries me. If it doesn't snow on Christmas, how's fat ass gonna use that sleigh? In case of rain, would there be a train that'll speed him on his way? If it doesn't snow this Christmas, how's fat ass get around to us? Say he breaks down on his way to town, would they let him use a bus? I sent him a nice long letter, and I hope it's not in vain. I really would feel much better if the fat fuck flew a plane. Now they say he got 8 reindeer for the sleigh he's driving here. But how the fuck's he go if it doesn't snow on Christmas this year? Take it, boys. Ah, that's so pretty. Wonderful, love. Fucking wonderful. I sent him a nice long letter, and I hope it's not in vain. I really would feel much better if the fat fuck flew a plane. Now they say he got 8 reindeer for the sleigh he's driving here. But how the fuck's he go if it doesn't snow on Christmas this year? All right, I got a treat for you. Listen to these kids. Are they great? Beautiful, beautiful.
In case of rain,
this kid's great or what? Ah, they're wonderful ones. Watch your mouth. Your mothers might be listening now. That's very sweet. Terrific, kids, terrific. You're just great. Everybody come over here. You did a great job, and I got candy for everybody. All right, all right. Which one of you little pricks stole all the fucking candy canes?
Nice, nice kids. Where'd you get them? From a fucking jail? Fucking reform school brats. Get the fuck out of here, all of you.
It was sure that was. I saw you. You took a candy.
I didn't do nothing.
Yes, you did. And put the
push
up. No, it wasn't. What are you talking about?
And we're back in the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec@bellsouth.net. That's V like in victory, folks. And welcome to those listening to me from the White Rose Society. And welcome to those of you listening to me on rantradio.com. And I hope, by the way, those of you who are here and they enjoyed my interview with Sean Kennedy a couple of weeks ago, the star, one of the stars of rantradio.com. Needless to say, they think I'm a star. So I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad somebody thinks something of me. And I'm glad I wasn't on vacation out in Southeast Asia. Now, if you've been living under a rock for the last couple of days, you might have missed the big news that, well, now the death toll is well over 100,000 people due to a tsunami, which is a large wave. And these waves were caused by an undersea earthquake. Waves that were 30 foot high, I believe, and traveling as fast as 500 miles an hour. It swamped parts of Sri Lanka, India, Thailand, multiple death in one of the poorest areas of the world. And where was Mr. Bush when people were calling for help and all that stuff? He was out on vacation, clearing brush on his ranch, his phony ranch out in Crawford, because, you know, he bought that. He's never, you know, they never owned a ranch before in their lives. Never lived on one. They lived in apartments and they lived in hotels until, of course, he needed a big publicity thing so he can make pretend like he's, you know, a regular working guy clearing brush and shit, which, of course, is just total horseshit that we're falling for so much. But the initial pledge, hang on a second. A little water there, pardon me. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Once, The first announcement came that they were going to give $15 million to the aid effort. And I'm like, $15 million? You know how much they're planning on spending on the inauguration, on the coronation in January? Over $30 million. And that's not even counting the security forces. We were going to put twice as much money into a big, fat fucking party for a guy who should clear the brush from his fucking brain than we were to help the thousands upon the hundreds of thousands now of people who have been either misplaced or outright killed by this natural disaster. And, of course, there was the usual bureaucratic snafus where we were aware that something was going to happen and for some reason we couldn't pick up a phone and give him a call, or we just weren't able to communicate that you need to get people away from the shores. If people had just been able to been told that this is dangerous, get the hell out. I mean, it was like it was several hours from when the earthquake hit to when the waves hit this ground, because the earthquake was, I don't know where the epicenter was, but it was out at sea, and it was hours before the waves were hit. And if people could have been informed, they would have saved tens of thousands of lives just by evacuating the area. I saw some remarkable video footage of that, and man, I hope I'm never in that situation. You know, Atlanta's landlocked. We have enough problems with tornadoes around here. Thank you very much. But I've never witnessed anything on this thing. 100,000, over 100,000 people dead. And at the fucking press conference, when they finally dragged Bush's ugly ass out there, and, you know, made him stand in front of reporters and read a few prepared statements. They lobbed at him some really softball questions. One guy, get this, one guy asked him if he was offended by a suggestion that was made by someone in the UN that the rich nations have been stingy in the aid. And granted, the guy wasn't speaking about America specifically. He was talking about all of the rich nations, all the rich nations of Europe and in Asia and stuff like that. And the reporter asked if Bush is offended by it. What the fuck is that shit? What the hell is that all about? Who cares if Bush is offended by it or not? Unfucking believable. You know, now, you know, they've raised the amount of aid to something like 35, 40 million. But you know something? We spend more than that for like, 4 to 6 hours for our shit in Iraq. We'll spend plenty of money to go out there and fucking kill people, but there isn't a cent to go out there and save people. This is your moral leader? This is your good Christian? Fuck you! Unfucking believable. And the other nations of the world could be more generous, but they're not so fucking snotty about it. Oh yeah, we'll throw them a few million. No big deal. And Frank Rich had a column about that, just talking about how it's just a big party in Washington. They don't care. They don't care. They had, while the whole thing was going on, they had the Kennedy Center Awards. And Sir Elton John was honored. And, you know, Elton John has said Bush and this administration are the worst thing that's ever happened to America. And then he and his boyfriend joined the president and the first lady in the presidential box there. And, of course, that's the morning of, you know, we had 26 Iraqi security guards killed in Iraq. And we've had a few hundred killed in the last week or so. It's just unbelievable. The surreal fucking world that we live in. It's just surreal. Okay, listen to this. Let's compare this. This is from an article by Frank Rich in the New York Times called Washington's War Cry, Party On. It's on the website. You can see it there, and it'll be in the papers on January 2nd. And he was talking about the last paragraph that he had. Was talking about Franklin Roosevelt's inauguration in 1945. And Roosevelt decreed that the usual gaiety be set aside at the wartime inaugural in January 1945. And, of course, now with Mr. Bush, there will be no such restraint in the $40 million four-day extravaganza planned this time, with the top ticket package priced at $250,000. The official theme of the show is celebrating freedom, honoring service. Now, that's no guarantee that the troops in Iraq will get armor, or that the people in Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and Thailand will get the help that they need. And I'm sure, according to Mr. Rich, Mr. Bush and his Republican cronies will give Homefront military people free admission to one of the 9 inaugural balls and let them eat cake. Because that's what these people are all about, ladies and gentlemen. They're just the most bunch of evil cocksuckers you have ever seen in government. And, when it comes right down to it, when it comes down to, if it ever gets down to a war crimes trial, which you know it won't because these powerful pricks always seem to be able to get out of that. But if it comes down to it, I hope this is one of the things that they talk about. No sense of shame. Absolutely none at all. No sense of decorum. No class. Mansion trash. The things that happened, well, you know, the thing that happened in Southeast Asia is a horrible, horrible tragedy. And these guys are like, whatever. You know, whatever. It was the same way with New York. A lot of words, not a lot of action. As far as the World Trade Center is concerned, biggest terrorist strike on the United States. Makes a nice little photo op out of it, but when it come down to actually helping shit out, really doing shit, you had to be forced into it, what little he gave. Go into war, yeah, sure. Armor for the troops? Nah, we have other priorities. Halliburton's getting your money. Soldier has the nerve to question about it. Secretary of Defense just rips him. And the whole thing becomes, but from the right-wing media, becomes a thing about, well, the reporter set him up with that question. You know something? Fuck you. Damn, these people are evil. Damn, these people have no morals. They have no sense of shame. They have no concern for human dignity. They have no concern for human life except for how it makes them money. That's all they fucking care about. They're the only fucking people in the world. And everybody else can go screw. Whether you're a poor working guy in the United States, even if you're one of the stupid redneck cocksuckers that vote for these people, or if you're a blue-collar worker from a blue state that's worked and lived in a union environment most of their lives with decent pay, he don't give a shit about you. He doesn't give a shit about me. If someone would have come in here and put a bullet through my head, he'd laugh it off. If someone would have come over and put a bullet in all of your heads out there, he'd laugh it off. Who cares what we think? Who cares what we think? And what do we care about 120,000 people on the other side of the world who are mostly brown anyway? Oh, what was it? What TV channel? I think it was on Atrios. They were showing about how the kids they showed on TV were all white. Never mind that the only white people there were a few tourists. Most of them were, you know, non-white. And of course, as Mr. Bush and his friends see it, if you're not white, you're not even human to begin with. Actually, the way they think, if you're not them, you're not even human to begin with. What's sickening is that this is what we chose. You can say all you want about fraud. You can say all you want about the election being rigged. But you know what? This is what we chose. There's no fucking way in the world it should have been even close enough. The only way Kerry was going to win was with something along the lines of a 75 to 80% of the vote. And there was no way he was going to get that. Because about half the country has been fucking brainwashed. And now we have to live with the results of it. And you know who this is going to help, of course. It's going to help Al-Qaeda. Because now they can turn around and say, see, they really don't care about you. Even when something happens that has nothing to do with you, they're not going to lay out any hands to help you out because they don't give a shit about you. And they'll say, but we give a shit about you. Help us fight them and your life will be better. Or at the very least, you'll be able to get some revenge on them. And there are plenty of ears willing to listen to that. And it's all George Bush's fault. And Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Faith and all these fucking pricks. All of them. Fucking war crimes, man. I mean, we've had presidents do some nasty shit before, but never anything like this. Let me put an end to this before my fucking head explodes. I am so pissed off. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show signing off. We will see you next time. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug, with a creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do everything, open a can of Dan, and make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no more, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
of steel, a mug of Doug, a cup of